Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online kpcg.fm with a live link at thetrumpet.com. Here's what's coming up on this Wednesday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. More people are working in the U.S., but there are trade wars that are starting. Also, a phone scam that you should be aware of. And we'll take a look at manners. That and a whole lot more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We are online, too, at kpcg.fm. And we have a live link at thetrumpet.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm. And if you'd like to email us, please do that. Comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon is here today. Lots of interesting stories to talk about. A couple of sports notes worth mentioning. A couple of records set last night in the NBA. One of our favorite sporting activities. Mavericks' Dirk Nowitzki, he joins the 30,000-point club. There's not too many people in that club. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think Michael Jordan's in there, probably Karl Malone, a few others. Not easy to score 30,000 points in a pickup league, let alone the NBA. So congratulations to Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah, he was spectacular in that game on Sunday against the Thunder. I saw a little bit of it, and just as always, as if he hasn't even aged, just skying these shots in off the backboard from 18 or 20 feet out like it's no problem. And there's three guys on him. He'll just loop it in.
Yeah. I saw a really interesting interview with him the other day, and he just seems like a pretty class act as far as the sports goes. And, you know, he's 7 feet tall, and he can shoot from so many different angles, which makes him hard to defend. And he doesn't have to be fast because he just can shoot from an odd angle with a lot of height. And they were talking about how he always works with this one shooting coach. He's had him for, I think, his whole career. And when they practice their shooting, they said it's really something to behold because they'll, like, imagine all these possibilities. Like, what if somebody bumps you and you're on one leg and you're falling backwards? Or, you know, they'll envision all these potential scenarios to where he can make all these different types of shots. And you see that in a game where he's off of one leg or, he's falling backwards because he'll turn into a defender. And he would get blocked if he just went up and shot it, but then he falls backwards and shoots it and still knocks it in. Unless you're 9 feet tall, I don't know what you're going to do to stop him. You know, so he's amazing.
Right. There's this guy called named Tim Grover. He's this legendary trainer of like Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, these guys. And he was saying you don't want to get robotic in the way you train with these athletes because obviously they can make one shot 100 times in a row, probably with their eyes closed. But what if he's screaming right in your face? What if he's smacking you with a sandbag while you shoot? Mm-hmm. You know, what if he's blowing an air horn at you? How do you do in those situations? How do you do under these different circumstances, pivoting a certain way, falling a certain way, like you were saying? It's very difficult, but those are the things you have to prepare for because obviously these other teams are going to be ready for you and you have to still throw something at them that they're not expecting.
Yeah, we did a little bit of that in high school when I played just in our free throw practice. The coach would have a whistle. And you never knew when he was going to blow it in your ear right when you were about to shoot. And there's pressure because if you missed, everyone had to run except you. So you didn't want to miss. And then the other thing was we would go through layups and they'd have, I don't know what they were, like foam pads, and they'd hit us with them, you know, so you could finish through contact, that type of thing. So we were not as advanced as these pros. But, yeah, you do different things to prepare. Another record last night in the NBA didn't turn out great for us, for Thunder fans, but Russell Westbrook ties a franchise record, 58 points, but they lost to the Trailblazers. So really, he shot pretty good percentage. I mean, he put up a lot of shots, but he made up quite a few. Sadly, they didn't get the win, though.
Yeah, he made more than half, but right at the end, he had this open shot that three-point shot that looked like it was going in, but it didn't, and it's too bad. Then the Trailblazers, where are they coming from? Out of nowhere. They beat us twice in a week.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a lot of debate about Russell Westbrook. Does he need to shoot less, pass, you know, more? And it's interesting. It's an interesting conversation, but you do look at the box score and you see Portland and everybody's got 10, 15, 18 points. And then you look at ours and it's, you know, 6, 3, 4, and then 58. So he's playing phenomenally well. Hopefully they can kind of figure it all out. You know, when I watch the games, I don't watch them all, but, you know, the ones that I see, yeah, there's a time or two where I think, well, maybe, he could have done something different. But they need his energy. They need him to be aggressive and to attack and you know, I feel like for the other players, it's kind of up to them to step up a little bit.
Yeah, from what I've been seeing, too, there are games where the Thunder has a balanced box sheet or box score, but really a lot of the time, Russell Westbrook's making the same plays, and it's just those rare games they're actually making the shots where he passes it to them. He could easily have like 15 or 20 assists a game on average, but guys miss some wide open shots after he passes.
Yeah, it's got to be really interesting because if your job is to make a jump shot, you're just a jump shooter, and you miss a few in a row, you just got to start messing with your head a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially because you're making millions of dollars to shoot those shots in most cases. There's some good economic news, at least maybe on some level here. U.S. private sector adds 298,000 jobs in February. Economists surveyed by Reuters had forecast the national employment report would show a gain of 190,000 jobs. And so they got quite a few more than they thought, over 100,000 more. Private payroll gains in the month earlier were revised up to 261,000 from an originally reported 246,000 increase. The report is jointly developed with Moody's Analytics, and the unemployment rate is forecast to tick down to 4.7% from 4.8%. So those numbers are always interesting. I don't know that they're completely accurate because there are people that just don't look for work anymore. But if you're adding 298,000 jobs, that's good on some level, I guess.
Right, yeah, that employment number, 4.7 or 4.8%, that's probably like three times lower than the actual amount of people who should be working who aren't. So need to consider that too. But yeah, at least there are some slight improvements there.
Related to what's going on with the economy here in the U.S., there is a story at thetrumpet.com that's really interesting. This is from a few days ago. Trade wars have begun. It's written by Brad McDonald, and that was posted March the 2nd, last Thursday. He says the Bible prophesied that this is how World War III would start. So there's a lot at thetrumpet.com about trade wars, and this headline ties into that. It's from Reuters today, and it says, exclusive, Mexico cancels sugar export permits to U.S. in trade dispute. So, and this is a link that comes off of Drudge, and the way Drudge had it was, it begins, you know, like trade wars. So kind of interesting. It says the U.S. sugar industry, which, by the way, is huge, late last year pressed the Commerce Department to withdraw from a 2014 trade agreement that set prices and quota for U.S. imports of Mexican sugar unless the deal could be renegotiated. So even though it's happening now, it'd be easy to think this is a reaction to like President Trump, but they've been wanting to do this for a while with the trade deal. U.S. sugar prices have soared since late last year when Washington said the 2014 deal that suspended large duties on sugar from Mexico after a trade investigation may not be working as intended. The U.S. domestic raw sugar contract on, it settled at 31.71 cents per pound on Tuesday. So that's what they're paying. The highest in nearly 5 years. The license cancellation by Mexico adds to protracted marketplace uncertainty, said Richard Pascoe, president of the Sweetener Users Association trade group. He said, we need adequate supplies and the lack of resolution is a problem, he told Reuters in a phone interview on Tuesday. So we get a lot of our sugar from Mexico, and they're having a little bit of a dispute here. I don't know if we'll expect to pay more because of that or if they'll just try to find other suppliers or if they can. But in any event, there's definitely some trade issues that are popping up.
Yeah, it seems like Mexico is not taking very kindly to some of the promises Mr. Trump made on his campaign trail, but also even since he's been the president. And I saw a headline, too, about how Mexico is going to try to help illegal immigrants who are in America already. Like, they're going to have some multi-billion dollar program to assist illegal immigrants already in America, which if they do that, you could just follow the money trail and track down every illegal who is here pretty easily. I mean, that doesn't seem like a very smart plan by Mexico.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Definitely some division there, and there's a lot written at the Trumpet about what you can expect to see with trade wars. And again, this article by Brad McDonald, Trade Wars Have Begun. You can find that there at the front page of thetrumpet.com, and it gives you some insight into what you can expect to see with these different trade disputes that are popping up. Grant, you ever have a situation where you get a call on your cell phone, you don't recognize the number, and then they either hang up right away or it's they send you a strange text or something. I've had that happen.
Yeah, definitely. It happens a lot.
It's a lot of times it can be part of a scam. And this is a write-up from Inc.com. I thought it was worth looking at. They say, do not return calls or texts from these area codes. And they give you a list. It may be a scam. Hmm. And anytime I get a call on my phone that I don't know, I'm pretty hesitant. If I don't know the number, I'm pretty hesitant to answer because most numbers are programmed in. And so it'll pop up and it'll say, hey, it's Grant. Right. Calling me, so I know who it is. If I don't know, if it's not somebody I have programmed in my phone, I'm a little bit hesitant to answer it. But so there are some scams. What is the scam? Well, there's a couple of variations of it. In the first version of the scam, criminals target their victims simply by calling them, usually from a robocaller, call autodialer, which supplies caller ID information that the victim will not recognize, and hanging up before anyone answers. So your phone rings, you go to look at it, it's a number, and then it's gone. That happens multiple times a week to me, mm-hmm. for sure. Probably to a lot of people. And they say what they're trying to do is they're trying to get you to be curious. Oh, who is that? Why did I miss that call? They want you to call them back. Criminals sometimes do this several times in succession, so victims can see a call coming in repetitively from some number they don't recognize, trying to get them to be more and more mm-hmm. curious. My wife and I both have cell phones. The numbers are close to each other. And so sometimes it'll happen where I'll get it and then she'll get it, like within 30 seconds.
Wow.
And we're like, hey, we're getting, you know, the scam call, whatever, yeah. There's another variant of the scam. The criminals don't hang up quickly, but they wait for the intended victim to answer the call, at which point the robocaller plays a recording of someone crying for help or the sounds of someone in need of medical attention or under attack, and then it hangs up. Now, I've never gotten that one, maybe because I don't answer them. But so you get this call, it sounds like somebody's having a problem, and all of a sudden the line goes dead. And so a lot of people are like, oh, I got to help this person. So they call them back. That's what they want you to do. Some criminals may do the same, pretending to be a collection agency, law enforcement official, or doctor. That happens. I get those all the time. In the third version of the scam, a criminal sends a text message similar to the voice recording, explaining that they're in danger. They need help. Often making it appear as if the message was sent by accident to the wrong recipient. I just happened to get it, but I can help these people. They want you to think that. And they'll usually ask you to call or text back. You know, I need help, text me back. In all of these cases, a criminal wants you to call or text back. And the reason is because the number that you would be calling back or texting back is a premium number that will charge you quite a bit of money. So if they can keep you on the phone or if they can get you to text them, you're going to get charged and they're going to get paid. And so that's the scam.
Brilliant.
These calls are likely part of what is commonly known as the 473 scam or the ring and run scam or the one ring scam. One ring to unite them all. And the numbers displayed on your caller ID or sent in a text message are likely premium numbers. So you're going to be charged for them. They say, what do you do? Well, just don't answer the call. Don't text back. And so they give a whole list of area codes. There's a whole list. There's just a ton of them. I'm not going to go through them all because that would be very time consuming. But you can go to Inc.com and see all the area codes. A lot of them are from they're U.S. numbers, but they're not from the state. Like they're from like the Bahamas, Bermuda, St. Vincent, Barbados, places like that. 242-441-784-246-473, et cetera. So, quite a few numbers. Now, some people might have relatives there, and they might legitimately call you, but you would know those numbers. In the U.S. territories, area codes that might pop up are 684-671-670-787-939 or 340. That's from American Samoa, Guam, U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico. That's where they're calling you from.
So that does make sense because those places, if you called them back, it's not technically in the state, so they could charge you more for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can get some from Canadian area codes as well. So I never answer a call from Abraham Blondo. No, I'm kidding. He has a local number. Anyway, there's a bunch of numbers there that are from different provinces. And so I don't really – I guess I look at the area code because if it's not local, I think, well, who would that be? Like I don't know. I'm pretty aware of who I know around the nation, and I would have them programmed into my phone. So I never really even bother with the area codes. I just – if it's a number I don't know – I typically don't answer it. Mm-hmm. And in U.S. and Canada, obviously, if you get a call from a 900 area code, probably not the best because they want you to call them back and they're going to charge you. So it's just crazy all the different scams that are out there, but it's good to be aware of it, especially probably people that are maybe a little younger, a little bit on the older side, that just would naturally answer the phone and not think as much about it. Sometimes, a lot of times they target those groups. So you have to be careful.
I saw a couple of YouTube videos recently of, I guess, some scamming practice that's based in Pakistan. And what they'll do is they'll call you pretending to be the IRS. They'll say you owe $5,000, $7,000. And the person will know what the scam is when they answer. So they'll be filming it. They'll be filming the entire time as they play along. And so they'll say like, oh, I don't have my card on me right now. And so the scammer will say, well, you could just go buy a couple of gift cards at Walmart and load all your money onto that. And that's totally fine. And then finally the guy says, are you serious? You think that the IRS would charge us through gift cards? Like, obviously, right. This is a terrible scam. So they were just leading them along for 10 or 15 minutes, just trying to waste as much time as possible so they couldn't scam someone else who would actually fall for it.
Yeah, you do get those robocallers with the recorded message. And I had one the other day that it was different than anyone I'd had before, because I did answer it because it was, I think, actually a local number. And I thought, well, maybe it's just somebody I don't have programmed. There's a brief pause, and then this woman says, oh, sorry, I just dropped my phone. And then my wife was in the room there, too, and she could hear it. And she's like, I got that same call, and so I just hung up on it. But it did throw me, because I thought, because typically if there's a pause, and then you hear, like, the person, you know it's a recording. But they did it in such a way where it did appear, or it did sound like somebody had actually dropped their phone, and that's why there was the delay. And it's just so crafty. It's just nasty.
That's actually a good scam. The ones I saw were pretty poorly done. But after a while, you could tell they were poorly done. At first, it seemed pretty realistic. But yeah, people they spend so much time trying to steal money that, could you imagine if they put those types of skills to proper use? Mm-hmm. They would be rich in a legitimate way, because they're so creative and they know how to get ahead.
Yeah, and some of the scams, like you say, they're so poorly done, and you think, well, who would fall for this? But I always think, well, somebody does, and why they're doing it.
That's why they have a whole call center of people doing it, because they can afford to pay those people to do it.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Like, that's your life, scamming people. Yeah, how would you feel
probably be
good about that?
A depressing type of a job.
I would think so. Here's a note about life expectancy. It's rising in a lot of places, but it's actually declining in the U.S. For the first time in 20 years, life expectancy has actually declined in the U.S., dropping from 76.5 years in 2014 to 76.3 in 2015 for men. So, lost 2 months. Wow. 2015, that was, again, for men. And then for women, it dropped from 81.3 years to 81.2. So, they lost a month. And they say, of course, so it's about a month less. In all, there were 86,212 more deaths in 2015 compared to 2014. The U.S. ranks 29th out of 43 countries for life expectancy, lagging behind countries like China, Costa Rica, Slovenia, Korea, and the Czech Republic. In 2014, the U.S. ranked 28th. So we are dropping in that area, and a lot of it has to do, they say, with the diet, of course, what people are eating, preventable diseases, diabetes, heart attacks, things like that, where a lot of it gets back to diet and to lifestyle. And they say the reasons for the United States lag are well known. It has the highest infant and maternal mortality rates of any of the countries in the study, which surprised me, and the highest obesity rate. That did not surprise me. They say, in contrast to the United States, South Korea has a remarkable investment in early childhood nutrition, has been taking advantage of medical advances in technology across its population, and has some of the world's lowest obesity and hypertension rates. So really, you could probably pin it down, you'd pin it down to diet and exercise, and then you could also look at obesity. If a country has a high obesity rate, they have earlier death. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, diet, exercise, I'd say even screen use or, prescription drug addiction, where you are convinced by doctors that you need to have 30 different prescriptions, all of which have 50 different separate side effects. Those things can't be good for you. If you just went completely off all the pills, that would probably help as well.
Yeah, those are always amazing. The commercials, I think we've talked about that before, but the commercials for the different drugs and things they're trying to push, the side effects are worse than the thing you're trying to get rid of.
And you almost don't even realize how many side effects they're listing off, because there's always some peaceful music and some beautiful scenery that they're showing in the commercial. And just it happens to be that they are also listing some deathly illnesses along with that. So it's pretty much covered up. I can't imagine a life expectancy in America ever going up again, though.
No, not without some severe changes to lifestyle. And that's a really hard thing to do. Even if a person wants to, it's still hard because a lot of jobs, you kind of just sit most of the day. And then if you're just going to buy the food that's presented to you and you don't have a lot of time to invest in it, the stuff you buy isn't great. Mm-hmm. So it is, or in a lot of cases, people just aren't educated. They don't know. They think, they look at the package. It says it's fine. Whole grain or, whatever they throw in to make it seem good, and not knowing that there's some problems there. So, yeah, interesting study there. I don't know. When you get that old, maybe that last month doesn't matter so much. But across the board, of course, I imagine a lot of people are dying years earlier, and then it all factors, into that number.
And even that infant mortality rate that you mentioned, I believe a lot of that also has to do with diet. So the same thing that caused the obesity also caused the infant mortality rate in a lot of cases. Women, if they're not really healthy during the pregnancy or even months before the pregnancy really healthy, then that could horribly affect the baby too.
Absolutely. It's a huge deal. When my son was born and he had to stay in the hospital for a few weeks, he had some issues. But it was interesting just kind of learning about what goes on there and some of the other issues people had, because the babies are all kind of in the same area. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of babies that are in intensive care that are premature, and that's why they're there. They might be fine, but they have to get to a certain size before they can release them, certain weight. And they said most of them were born to teenage girls. Because they weren't physically probably ready to have the babies yet. And certainly they weren't paying attention to nutrition.
Right.
It's not like it was a planned thing, And so as a teenager, a lot of times you don't pay as much attention. And if you're drinking soda and eating stuff that kids like to eat, you don't have the building blocks for a good situation with a child. So I was surprised to learn that.
Yeah, that's the age of invincibility for a lot of us. We feel like we could stay up all night, eat whatever we want, and it will not have any impact, and it doesn't for a few years usually. That's why we think we can keep doing it. But yeah, that would be a bad time to have a child whenever you're a teenager, and especially today, whenever you think of all the influences that teenagers are around with, the drugs and the alcohol all the time, especially if they ever dipped into some of that during pregnancy, that would be horrible.
Yeah, they have those commercials, you probably have seen them, where they have smokers and they talk about like what's happened to them. I hate those commercials, but they're effective.
Like that thing in their throat.
Ugh. And there is one where my mom said she smoked when she was pregnant, and then they showed the baby in the hospital and stuff. I mean, it's very effective, but they're hard to watch.
Yeah.
So some of those things do happen. Here's a story that's a little more positive, I guess. This is exciting too. Everybody wants to find something historical or treasure or something like that. That's always just a neat idea. This is from the BBC. A Danish boy finds remains of German Messerschmitt in a field. That's a World War II plane. It says when Klaus Christensen tried to bring his son's history homework to life, he probably wasn't expecting the boy to unearth a buried World War II warplane. Or for excited TV crews, forensic police, and explosive experts to descend on the family's farm in Berkisi, Denmark. But that's exactly what happened. 14-year-old Daniel Rahm Christensen found the remains of a German Messerschmitt plane and its pilot in an unremarkable field, in a family field. According to Mr. Christensen, his grandfather once told him that a plane had crashed there in November 1944. He told the Danish news station DRP4 that when my son Daniel was recently given homework about World War II, I jokingly told him to go and find the plane that is supposed to have crashed out in the field. And the father and son joined forces, got a metal detector, and thought, well, let's go look around. Didn't expect to find anything. But, because they thought it was removed years before. But then they had the beeping sign on the metal detector, and sure enough, something there. They started digging, realized they needed to go deeper. So they got an excavator from a neighbor, and around 4 to 6 meters down, the plane's carcass began to reveal itself. The man had lived there for 40 years on that field and had worked it, and they didn't know it was there. It was just buried below the surface.
So the grandfather, apparently he must have seen the plane crash back there, but never bothered to check right away.
Yeah, they knew.
After it crashed, I'm sure they got rid of it somehow.
Right. Well, it's wartime. I suppose you
probably didn't want to go out there. Planes are crashing out in the field.
For sure. They say, so their haul included an engine from the ME-109 Messerschmitt plane, Luftwaffe munitions, and the bones of a crew member who died in the crash. They say in the first moment it was not a plane. It was maybe 2,000 to 5,000 pieces of a plane. And then we found a motor. And then suddenly we found parts of bones and parts from the pilot's clothes. Then we found some personal things, books, a wallet with money. Either it was a little Bible or it was Mein Kampf. It was a book in his pocket. We didn't touch it. We just put it in some bags. The museum is now taking care of it. I think there's a lot of information in those papers. And so then the World War II historians came out and the Danish authorities to take a look at it. The field was being used for grass or cattle for years and years and years.
Oh.
And about 5-6 meters below the surface, you got a crashed World War II plane and a dead pilot. You never know what's out there.
Hopefully that's not poisoning all the cattle that were grazing right on top of it.
Yeah, that's just absolutely amazing. So how exciting.
Yeah, that's why history just has to be one of the most interesting subjects to get into, because those things really did happen. It's not just in a book. And especially when you find remains like that, it just really brings it to life and makes you want to get back into what happened during that time even more.
When I was growing up, I used to hear certain stories about stuff that had happened kind of in the area where we lived, and I don't know if they were urban legends or whatever. And as kids, you'd always we'd run around and kind of look for stuff. You never found anything. But we lived in an area where there were a lot of Indian tribes. And so a lot of stuff was found. Of course, that would be the same here in Oklahoma, you know, old arrowheads and things like that. And then there was one story where somebody stole some gold or something, apparently, and they were running away trying to hide it. And they got inside of a hollowed out tree that was dead, but then they couldn't get out of it and they died in there.
Wow.
And the gold was still supposed to be in there. That was the urban legend.
Oh.
So I was always looking around at the trees like, I wonder if there's gold in there.
It'd be worth it to explore, especially when you're young and you like doing it anyway.
Should have had a metal detector.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I didn't have. Didn't have a metal detector. But for this guy, how amazing. And that's the thing. If you could just dig around, especially in Europe or really anywhere, but there's a lot of history there in Europe, I bet you'd find all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
Fascinating things.
Yeah, that would just be spectacular. Obviously, they've had the two world wars there, but even just civilization itself sprouting from that area for the most part, just or at least near that area, and some of mankind's earliest settlements being around there.
Yeah, so that was just really neat. The fact that they found the plane is really neat, but the fact that the pilot was in it, that to me takes it to the next level. Mm-hmm. They didn't say how much money was in the wallet. Is this still good? Can I use this? Pretty interesting. Of course, this one happened. This is kind of a funny one. Interesting. It's amazing what animals can do. A cat, sometimes you hear about people having a cat or a dog, usually a dog, I guess, but like it'll get lost or something, then months later it comes home. Like it just finds its way home. Well, this isn't exactly like that, but it does show what animals can do. There's a long-haul truck driver, and he has a cat that he takes with him named Percy. It's his little buddy on the road. And so the truck driver got food poisoning. You never want to get food poisoning, but particularly when you're driving a truck. And so he was not feeling well, so he pulled over at a way stop and fell asleep. And when he woke up, the window was open a little bit and the cat was gone. He thinks the cat must have stepped on the power window button and got out. So he looked all around, couldn't find Percy, and it bothered him. I mean, Percy's his friend. He takes him trucking, takes him on the road with him. Couldn't find him, so finally he had to keep going. So he drove 400 miles. And when he pulled over, through the snow and some rain and just really rough conditions, he gets there. There's a cat. It was under the truck the whole time.
What?
It was like hanging on underneath the truck.
Oh.
400 miles.
No way.
Yeah. So Percy made it. He was delighted to see Percy. He said Percy appeared to be a little scared and smelled bad, but he had made the journey and he was okay.
So at least Percy was loyal. It sounded like at first he was abandoning his owner, but he tried to come back, couldn't get into the actual truck in time, so he just held on underneath.
Just held on underneath. 400 miles. You think about that, how long that would take. You know, trucks, they don't go super fast, probably 70, right? So, I mean, you're looking at a 5-6 hour trip at least or more.
And
you just hung
on. Hold
on
to.
I don't know. Must have found a little spot to just be, you know, and with all the bouncing around and sometimes stuff gets, you know, thrown up underneath. And then also just the snow and the rain and all that. He had the ride of his life.
Oh, yeah.
So good job. Good job, Percy. Way to go.
Well, yeah, you hear about, you know, or you experience how strong the cats are and how much it hurts whenever they claw at you, but that just really explains how much grip strength they must have just to be able to hold on for that long.
Amazing story. Survival. Percy and the Truck Driver. That sounds like a kid story. maybe a scary kid story.
Should be some sort of a movie.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, and we have a live link at thetrumpet.com. We'd like you to follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm, and send us any comments you have to comments@kpcg.fm. We appreciate those. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. The Key of David program is coming up in a little bit here on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. A few topics discussed today, including some remarkable lessons from the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong. So make sure you listen for that, and also some headlines as well. There is a concert coming up I wanted to mention again, Thursday, March the 9th. That's this Thursday, 7:30 p.m., that's here at Armstrong Auditorium, and we're broadcasting from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. And this concert on Thursday at 7:30 p.m. is the National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine, and this can be a tremendous show. There's more information at armstrongauditorium.org. You can check that out there, and I think there might be a few tickets left, so get them while they're hot, fresh. Fresh out of the oven?
Sounds like some sort of culinary treat.
Yeah. Also, you can check out thetrumpet.com today. Here's some good analysis pieces. Drug killing surge in Mexico by Andrew Miller. Also, Europe seeks collective nuclear strategy. That's by Brad McDonald. And Japan extends term limit for Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. That's by Kieran Underwood. There's a lot there at thetrumpet.com. Just some of the analysis pieces you can check out. And also today, the Trumpet Hour program, don't miss that. Some of the topics include violence in the U.S., angry, ignorant Americans. That's Abraham Blondeau talking about a piece he had recently in the Trumpet. And stories of the Great Flood and more. So the Flood one, very interesting, looking at just how different civilizations, I guess, if you want to call them that, recorded the event. You know, it's not just in the Bible, it's in other writings as well, and they all talk about this great event. There are a lot of people that want to say that the flood was just folklore, but it's recorded in a lot of historical sources outside of the Bible, so they take an interesting look at that.
Well, yeah, what was it, those 7 or 8, something like that, people on the ark? Obviously they survived the flood, and then must have told their children and grandchildren and great grandchildren all about what happened. And so all the civilizations that came from that would have had some sort of story passed on through the generations. So if it's a true story, you wouldn't just find it in the Bible. People would be talking about something that huge.
Yeah. And it's kind of like that plane that crashed in the field that we were talking about. You know, people knew it crashed, and that was only back in 1944, but over time people forget about it, and you hear about it, but they're like, who knows? We don't know if it's there, because time moves on. Same thing. Obviously, a few generations after the flood, everybody would know about it and be very well-versed in it. But over time, you know, people forget, or they, I don't believe that, you know, and that's just the way it goes with a lot of things. That's how come there's so much that's been lost over the years that people used to know, but now they relegate to myth.
Well, yeah, with the flood, obviously the earth starts to recover and you don't see too much physical evidence of everything being devastated by unforeseen floodwaters. So then people just start to say, well, I don't really see any evidence for it. You probably are just telling me some story because I'm a kid.
Yeah.
and I'm not going to believe that. And then that's just kind of how people can dismiss that story in the Bible as well.
Yeah, you see that. I mean, even if you look at something as trivial as sports, you know, every generation has their player in a particular sport that's the greatest player ever. Mm-hmm. Then the next generation comes along. He was no good, you know.
Yeah.
And every generation has a different thought about it. And but then as time moves on, they forget about players. And that's not really different with anything in human life. People tend to move on and think that whatever came before is, you know, they don't believe it. They want to believe only what they see in front of them.
And isn't that a really disturbing trend in every area? Basically the disdain for history, that basically not seeing that it even is an important subject to talk about. Whenever you forget something like the flood even happened, that's probably a pretty bad thing, especially whenever there are so many lessons to learn from that. There's a reason the flood took place. So whenever you dismiss the fact that the flood even happened, you're clearly not learning the lesson.
Right. Yeah, it made me think, sort of related note, you know, today is Day Without Women. They're having a protest. They've had this Day Without Immigrants, Day Without Women. I think that's the second
There was
one.
Another women's march like a month or two ago, right? So,
Could
or
be,
a month
yeah,
and a half ago, right after the inauguration.
Right. So today, that's one of the protests going on today. And it made me think, you know, the thing that really, really happens in this nation and a lot of nations, in the West especially, is it's not just a day, but it's all the time without God. You know, you don't see a day without God, right? Where people would say that, like, we're going to have a day without God today to show how much we need him in our lives. There are people that do practice religion to a certain extent, but there are a lot that don't or don't really have any interest in it. But that doesn't come up much. You know, we talk about different things in society that if we didn't have this or that, society would not function. And that's what they're trying to prove with these different protests. Well, what about a society without God? What about a society that thinks the flood was a myth and laughs at it? What about that? You know, we don't see a lot of people protesting that type of an attitude.
Yeah, that's really true. And when you think about all these other protests that are usually taking place in a large urban area, these big cities, if you talk about a day without God in one of these big cities, literally nothing would be different than how it already is.
Right.
And where are all the biggest problems? Where is the highest crime? Where is the highest amount of poverty? It's in the big city, the most godless area that we have. So they could be protesting that. There'd be plenty of evidence to support why God needs to exist in people's lives.
Yeah, that's a protest that I don't think it's going to pop up.
Probably not.
In the near future, but it is worth thinking about. So anyway, some really interesting topics are in the Trumpet Hour program. Make sure you listen for that today. And, of course, the archives are online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com. Grant, you've got a really interesting article here for us from the San Diego Reader. The title is actually this: Y'all Are Rude. I hear a certain accent when I read that. This writer is not happy with the lack of manners as they see it. They say, look up from your phone, look another person in the eyeballs, and use your mouth to communicate gratitude. So I believe it's a man writing this. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. He seems like he's a little upset.
Yeah. Apparently he's lived in San Diego for a while, but he was raised in the South, where anytime you have a problem, it's like a community effort to come together and help you out with whatever you're asking for. But in San Diego, he still has this memory from years ago where he opened a door for somebody. The person walked past while looking at his phone the entire time, didn't acknowledge him in the slightest. And then a stream of people just started going through the door. He couldn't let go of the door because people just thought the door was magically opening before them and that it was supposed to be that way. They were all looking at their phones. Not a single person said thank you. And so after a while, when you're holding the door for dozens or hundreds of people, you have to let go of it and go on your way at some point. So inevitably, he hit somebody with the door and the woman cursed at him. And it's like, well, you're not even looking where you're going. You're looking at your phone the whole time. No one's saying thank you. He can't stand there all day holding the door. He's not a doorman. He's not getting paid to do that. He has to go somewhere.
Right. He was trying to be courteous and he wasn't having anyone be courteous to him and kind. So he kind of ended up with a bad deal. That can happen. But I will say, on the upside of it, here in Oklahoma, most cases, people have been pretty courteous, depending on where you go. Like, I was thinking of holding the door. A lot of people are quick to hold the door, and then I try to do the same. And most cases, now there are times where people don't appreciate it. But for the most part, I think it probably depends on what part of the country you're in. I think when you get into the more urban areas, busier areas, people are kind of, you know, about business and out of my way. A little more of that mentality, maybe.
Exactly. That's what he was saying here, too, is at least with a place like New York, they're renowned for people being rude, getting angry at you for the slightest provocation. And he said, well, at least they do it to the fullest. You know, he's talking about, like, in San Diego, how they're kind of half-hearted about it. Like, they just are selfish. They're not doing it to uphold a standard. They're just doing it to be rude. And so I guess in a way he was trying to say that New York was bad too, but at least it's kind of humorous the way they do it.
It's more of the personality trait of the city. So this is interesting. So he wrote this in the San Diego Reader. So he wants the people of San Diego to get his point. So he's going to have a lot of people in San Diego not happy with him, I bet.
Exactly. Yeah, he definitely is speaking out pretty strongly here. And it was definitely a really well done article. He talks about another time where he's standing waiting for the light at the crosswalk to turn so that he can go across the street. And he's standing, he's looking around. There's a bunch of people. They're all on their phones. They're all preoccupied with themselves. And he happens to be looking around, and one woman looks up right when he's looking past her. And so they make eye contact. So all he did was smile, and then he's looking around some more, and then she looks up at him again, like right whenever he's
right.
happens when you're looking at, you know, those awkward eye contacts where the person looks up and thinks that you might have been staring at right. her the whole time when it's not the case. And then so he just said, good morning. And then she blurts out, I don't have any money. Like, that's what he was going to ask for.
Wow. Yeah, it is. It does, I guess, highlight the overall trend of just, even though we are, in a lot of cases, more packed together, especially in cities, people are further apart than ever as far as looking at somebody, saying hello. That does seem a little out of the ordinary, especially in a bigger city, because I think people are, I don't know, in some cases, they're defensive. They feel like maybe there could be a threat. This woman probably felt somewhat threatened,
right.
and so she's trying to probably hide away in her phone, like don't make eye contact, don't look at other people. And so even though you can be at a street corner waiting for the light to change with 30 other people, you're in your own little bubble.
Right.
And there is a lot more of that.
Yeah, and like you were saying about Oklahoma, that's the first thing people notice when they come here is just the people are almost too nice, if that's even possible. I mean, they really do go above and beyond. And that could be somewhat of a benefit of trying to live based on the Bible in at least a couple of ways. This is a really religious part of the country, and that is scorned by some of these bigger city, more liberal, more urban areas.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. And it's interesting, too, just different parts of the country. They sort of have different personality traits. I'm from up north. And up north, I don't know, people are friendly, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cases, maybe keep to themselves a little more. I mean, it depends. You're gonna have a variety there. But it does seem like that might be more the case. Maybe it's because the winters are so cold.
Mm-hmm.
We can't waste our time with the pleasantries. We have to get out of the Arctic gale. No, I don't know. But it does seem like there are different traits as far as different parts of the country. And that's one of the fascinating things about the U.S. It's so big. It's one country, but yet it has a lot of different cultures within it.
Yeah, and a lot of those different cultures, you know, you can be polite without necessarily going against the entire culture of your area.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean like you have to be like the people in the South who would probably like to hold a 5 or 10 minute conversation with you every time that you might say good morning to them. People in the North are not going to be that way,
right.
but they could still be polite. They could still acknowledge that there are human beings around them instead of being totally locked away in whatever they're doing.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I saw this kind of interesting situation years ago. It was here, actually, in Oklahoma, and I went to a high school basketball game. And so I was sitting in the bleachers watching the game, and I noticed a girl, probably that attends the school, I'm guessing, and she walked in front of the bleachers from one side of the gym to the other. And that's never a comfortable thing to do, especially when you attend that school,
because
you're walking in front of all of your peers. And I, you know, we've all been there, and it's a little uncomfortable. And I noticed she was like looking at her phone the whole time. And I just thought, I wonder if she's really that engaged with what she's looking at, or if that's just a way to hide from this uncomfortable situation.
Right.
Because I thought, you know what, if I was still in school and I had a phone, I probably would have done that.
Exactly.
Because it's an uncomfortable
yeah.
situation, so I can hide away and kind of ignore everything else to sort of protect myself from, you know, the uncomfortableness of it. And I think that's maybe that's probably a lost skill for a lot of people, is how to comfortably interact with others. It's something that there probably are classes on it, but there probably should be some more, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it does seem like people are just so desperate to avoid any contact with people they don't know. But when you're out in public, there is sort of an obligation, if you're a considerate person, to at least be pleasant for other people to be around. And it goes beyond just people being buried in their phones all the time. I'm not expecting to hold a conversation with every stranger I come up to. But at the same time, I'm not going to be holding out my phone just to avoid talking to anybody. I'll have my phone put away, and then if they want to talk, then I will acknowledge them and engage them. I'm not going to bring it up because I don't know if the person actually wants to talk at all. But there's also, you know, I've noticed a lot lately, whether I'm in an airport or a mall or anywhere in public, there's always groups of people that just, they curse loudly while they're talking to each other, and they're just having a regular conversation but using curse words as a regular adjective in their conversation. And it doesn't matter if there's little kids around or anything, they just are letting it fly. And that's just a really, like, socially uncouth thing to do, that until recently that would have never happened. I can't imagine people just doing that, and at least without somebody telling them to stop.
Right. Yeah, that is a good point. That's interesting. Yeah, you see that with music coming out of cars and different
yeah.
things like that, where, yeah, and it is maybe, I guess, sort of a trend, probably especially among the younger generation, to be not considerate of the you know, the others that are around you. But somebody has to teach you that. You know, nobody probably knows that instinctively. We'll have to have somebody teach us when we grow up, like, hey, you're too loud. You know, you need to quiet down. You know, you need to do things. And those are things that you have to pass on generation to generation. Like, you know, for example, we were just recently staying at a hotel, and we got in there a little late. And one of the first things I told my kids, I'm like, you be quiet. Because in the hallway, people are sleeping.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. And so, but they wouldn't know. They would just naturally be like, hey, we're, you know. So somebody's got to tell them. And I think sometimes some of those lessons maybe get lost. And so you have these, what should be sort of social norms. This is how you are polite to others and respect others. Doesn't always happen. And now you introduce phones and that. And it's just a different world than it used to be.
Yeah, you do have to wonder how much young children are getting taught that anymore. Like, whenever you look at the school system, and it's all about building a child's self-esteem and never giving them any constructive criticism to help them improve in a certain area, those kids think they're the best thing that's ever happened and that they don't need to change anything about themselves. Be who you are, never change anything, don't worry about what others think of you. Those are some good things at times, but for that to be like a life principle where you never change anything and you don't care how other people feel about you, that just means you're going to be an unpleasant person for other people to be around. Right. That's how it's going to go. And this author, he's from the South, and he obviously that's a very courteous place in general. They have the stereotype of just being really, really friendly, which is just so enjoyable to be around. But he said there in San Diego, it's almost like asking for directions. That's something you don't do, because directions are a secret that are to be guarded behind a wall of feigned ignorance and disdain. So either you fake like you don't know where the place is, or you get angry at the person for even asking. Like, don't you have a phone? Can't you look it up? Yeah. He doesn't have a phone. So occasionally he'll ask, like, the direction of the beach, and the person will say they don't even know where it is. You're from there. You know where the beach is. Like, it's not that hard.
They don't want to be thwarted in their daily activity, whatever it
right.
is. Or they're maybe afraid. Mm-hmm. Maybe they think the guy's going to do something to them. I mean, you can see it both ways. It's a sad commentary on things in different parts of the country. It's a beautiful area out there. There is a lot of good, yeah. But there is a little bit of rudeness that this guy feels anyway. Does he give any sort of lesson at the end, like something he'd like to see changed? I guess just people be more friendly?
Actually, the lesson was what I alluded to earlier about New York. He said he wasn't even insisting on politeness, but just like, if you're going to be rude, go all the way like New York did. Oh. Like, at least take it to the extreme instead of being like passive aggressive about it, basically. But I'm sure the implication is don't take it to the extreme, just go the other way and actually be nice for once. Yeah. But again, like you're saying, you can understand why people might be a little bit leery these days, especially in a big city where on every corner someone's trying to stop you and sell you on some deal or hand out something somewhat suspicious to you.
Sure.
Like when I was in Chicago and a guy offered me marijuana literally 50 feet away from the police. That's something that you don't want to be stopped and you know, involved in.
Yep.
And so people would try to avoid that sometimes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can look at both ends of the spectrum today, even with what we're talking about. You have these phone scams and then people not being as friendly. And it's one's a reaction to the other in a lot of cases. Like, what's the scam here? Like, what are you trying to get from me? And people become quite hardened to try to protect themselves. And it's a bad cycle. And it's something that, yeah, I mean, I can see it from both sides of the spectrum there. But the sad thing is that people are becoming more isolated, I think, mm-hmm. in general, because of fear and because of wanting to hide away and avoid uncomfortable situations.
That's just the consequences of the getaway of life. Always trying to get things for yourself, and that's why people would think that that's what's going on.
Yeah, and the problem with that, of course, is that when everybody's trying to get, nobody gets anything.
Exactly.
Nobody gives anything, so nobody really gets anything at the end. A pretty interesting write-up there. It's from the San Diego Reader, kind of a sign of the times. Y'all are rude. That's about how you would say it. That's all the time we have for today on Trump Radio Live. Thanks for joining us, myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.